VentureCast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And at age 16, they decide to drop out of high school and move to L.A. together as teenagers to make it big. They arrive in L.A. in 1958 and audition and immediately get into a band called the Champs, who immediately go to number one, Ben, with what song?
Do you remember? Help me. I love this.
You'll know it in 2 seconds.
Oh my God.
50 years of music with 50-year-old white guys.
Welcome back to Los Angeles. That was the Eagles with a little witchy woman. Was it Jeff Simon?
One of these nights. Favorite is The Long Run. That's my actual favorite.
Yeah.
Tequila Sunrise. Yeah, I don't know. All right, well, welcome back.
One place where you and I disagree the most, Ben, is whether The Long Run has merit.
You don't like that one?
No, I really hate that one.
That's because Jeff Brown still hurries a lot and worries a lot, Tim. Not like you.
Yeah,
It's totally. But,
you know,
true.
We that didn't get it, so it's high time we quit it. You know, that's just.
That is excellent. Lots of Eagles lyrics coming at you. So we're gonna go into the torture basement. This is Torture Basement Part Deux. There are 15 songs coming at you. It is not that quick stuff that I did last time. However, there are two instrumentals that you're going to have to navigate, but they have LA in their titles. Therefore, they
you're
count.
Saying eight is the number?
Eight. If you get eight, you're going to win.
Oh, hey, one follow-up from last episode.
Yes, yes.
Capitol Records building, the house that Nat King Cole built.
Nice.
Ooh, I like that. I did not know that. And then Natalie Cole lived rent free.
Nice, Tim. So
sorry.
Good.
Sorry. Really? All right, let's hit it.
Are you ready? You ready, Ben?
Yep.
I know who this is.
There's a band that's living in L.A. Listen to the sound of the voices of the band in Los Angeles. When will you save me, Los Angeles? Are we doing all right in old L.A. tonight?
Nobody walks in LA, walking in LA.
awesome. I think I know the composer.
Well, you got it. That's the one. So that's it. You can fade us out. 15 songs coming your way. What are you guys? We're going to go through them and you alternate guesses or something. I can't believe you know the first one. I'm so mad. Darn it.
All right. Yeah, let's go. So I just wanted to roll it back.
Yeah.
And I'll stop after each one and we'll make a guess. That's great. That's fun.
All right. 8 out of 15 we're going for.
I think we're going to be close. Benny. This is George Benson.
LA Weekend by Mr. Yeah. George Benson. Pause.
Oh, yeah. So you don't have to yell pause. It's just slow on the
iTunes. Any guesses?
I think it's like Kansas or one of those 70s crappy. It's a 70s crappy band, but I don't know which one.
I will say that number 2, number 12, and number 13 are all different bands.
Yeah. All bands I can't identify, I don't think, because they're all shitty 70s bands, but. What is this crappy 70s LA band, Ben?
Do your best, man. I like Kansas. That's fine.
Let's stick with Kansas.
All right. It is Poco.
God.
But that perfect. Takes away Poco for number 12 and 13. So you're in
good shape. I might not have remembered Poco. All right. So this next one is Heim.
Oh, I had that one. I had Heim.
Oh, I'm sorry. I love this song. Give me a miracle, I just want out from this. I want to live in Los Angeles, and I'm the one in Los Angeles. So you keep using this guy. In Torture Basements, I believe. This might be his third appearance, because that's Frank Black, not the Pixies, right? That's a Frank Black solo song?
That is correct. And by the way...
What is with you and Frank Black?
I love the Pixies.
Yeah, but it's not the Pixies.
The number of songs that are about Los Angeles, that are about getting the heck out of Los Angeles, are amazing. Didn't even include the Midnight Train to Georgia. All right, keep going. Nice. There's a band
that's living in LA. That sounds like a Jeff Simon special, right there.
There's Doesn't it though? Band. I know. I can't believe I didn't. I recognize the guy's voice. It's an '80s band, obviously. Can I listen to it one more time?
Yeah.
That's not cheating. There's a band that's living in LA. Oh my god, oh my god, oh my god. It's They Might Be Giants. Is it They Might Be Giants?
It is They Might Be Giants. Yes. That is huge. You guys got 4 out of 5.
We're off to a rocking start, baby.
I'm torturing the torture baby.
Save me, Lost. that one's some emo band.
I'm thinking like crappy 90s, like Offspring is my closest guess. But it doesn't sound like the Offspring singer. It's not the guy who did, but I can't think of any other like punky, crappy 90s band.
I think it's more recent than that. I think it's emo. So I'm going to go.
Do?
Yeah.
I'll take a swing because I don't think it's the
Blink 182.
It's Blink 182. Son of a gun. Dang it.
You're the greatest. That is such a great pull. I can't even believe it.
I can't believe this.
Because I've got 4 out of the next 5. It's a
rally. I think I have one I think I have 2 of the next.
All right. Here we go. Oh.
That's Ozzy, right?
Yes. Ozzy. Oh, I totally agree.
Yep.
I know that one too.
You got to take it.
That's Billy Joel, right?
It is Billy Joel, indeed.
Live version of Los Angelinos. Very good. You got it, Ben? I have no idea.
From L.A. to Flushing, I leave your girly blushing.
That's a great line.
House of Pain.
It is House of Pain, you bastard.
Oh, my God.
I can't believe it.
Oh, my God, you're amazing. You are amazing.
Just from Flushing?
Several House of Pain appearances in the torture basement as well.
Indeed.
Maybe it's a weird guy from Boston.
And you got this one, too, Ben.
No, it's not. I can...
It's early Chili Peppers. That's the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh, great.
It is. And this? You got that one?
Is that the Go-Go's?
No,
it's Missing Persons.
Oh, right. Very nice.
Missing Persons is correct.
And that this one. I love the Snowblind cocaine reference. It's so 70s. Unbelievable. I don't know. I'm guessing the average white band, but I don't think that that's right. But I can't think of a 70s crap. Like, it's one of those bands that would have done the Schlitz malt liquor beer commercial where it's like 17 white dudes.
Ben, anything else?
Nah, you do it, Jeff.
I'd say average white band.
It's the Little River Band.
Oh, well, I'm certainly in the ballpark. That's the band that did Reminiscing, right?
Yeah.
Oh, God. And Lonesome Loser, is that Little River Band?
Is that?
Yeah.
Have you heard? Yeah. All right, keep going.
All right, next.
Did you like the song?
That song sucks. I think it's Sparks. That's who I think this did that terrible song. Or the band that did the song that was in Wayne's World. The Ballroom Blitz Band, whatever they're called.
I don't know who that was. You're not going to get this one. That was 10cc.
Oh, Jesus. That's the band that does "I'm Not in Love."
That's correct.
The song I know by them.
I love that song.
That doesn't sound anything like that other song. Okay.
I know. And
that's some boy band crap from recent times. I have no idea.
No guess. It is the Jonas Brothers. Son of a bitch. Good.
And the last one is Mike Post's theme for LA Law.
It is.
By the way, you just murdered that, Jeff Simons.
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. All you missed was the crappy 70s fans. That's it.
It's true. Which is usually Jeff's magic wheelhouse. I have to give Ben unbelievable credit for the Blink 182.
Those are all lucky stabs.
And that will never happen.
House of Pain and Jonas Brothers. Like, you took it. Those three, I mean, those were amazing polls, Benny B. Just phenomenal. Right.
So phenomenal. Here's where I'll take solace. I felt that the first one, as I was making it, was going to be too easy. And so I started thinking about the second one. But I kind of think that the listeners got something out of the first compilation.
As opposed to the second one, believe me.
Yeah, because only you psychos would know any of those songs. Right now, the listeners are like, what the hell was that?
Poco. I don't even remember what Poco's hit was.
Something About Love. Poco. I mean, I'll Call It Love by Poco.
I don't even know
right,
that.
Let's go. Ben, you're yawning. That means you go first. Favorite artist, song, album about L.A.? What do you got?
All right, so first let me say this was very challenging, super hard. I almost did the thing that I did in New York, where I went by the decades. We've highlighted multiple different LA bands. I mean, Guns N'
Yeah.
Roses is a fantastic one. Van Halen is a fantastic one. And of course, Dr. Dre, we've done. Really, really challenging. Just an absolutely fantastic musical town. And then before I select, let me just say one more time how much I love LA and just a moment on why. When I went out and spoke at UC Irvine, the really good buddy of mine who's a professor there was like, by some measures, UC Irvine is the most diverse university in the world. And I was like, really? And she was like, oh yeah, like it's just completely off the radar, but it's like a huge, gigantic swath of Asian people, and then a huge, gigantic swath of Latino people, and then a huge, gigantic swath of African Americans, and then a huge, gigantic swath of white people all mashed together on this campus. And LA is like that. Like LA is just like poor people, rich people, white people, black people, Asian people, Latino people just jammed together, cheek to chow, making it work. And the food tour, there's a claim by people who live in Los Angeles that it's the best food city in the world. And I think that's probably a little bit aggressive, but it's really good. Like super good food. And the reason why it's super good food is because it's so freaking diverse. And then when you're in LA, and it's even more so to me than New York, like it's this unique American city where you're like, it could work. It could work. This stupid thing could work. Like we could jam all these people from all around the world together, and as long as we're eating good tacos and Korean barbecue, it's going to work out. Like we could make it here all together. Absolutely love it. That the vibe to the place, fantastic. I did my own little personal food tour when I was driving around, and I'm not going to here to soft sell it. I mean, since it's America, it's got its own downside. So, for example, I went to a hipster gluten-free bakery, and I got my
Okay.
box of hipster gluten-free baked goods. Oh, and then I got to my car, and by the way, because it's LA, I rented a BMW. So I'm hanging out in my BMW, eating like gluten-free cupcakes, and it's like 70 degrees and sunny. I'm just hanging out there, and
Yeah.
this homeless woman comes up to me, and she's like, "I'm going to stab you." And I
Oh.
was like, I don't think you're actually going to stab me, but I'll leave. I'll take that as a polite request for you to get in my BMW and drive away. And I did. So all of that being said, hard place to choose just one artist or just one song. But I did fixate on one song. And then the more I thought about it, the artist was perfect. All right.
Okay.
So Doris and Hosea Jackson. Married in Los Angeles, both lower middle class working people, both work at UCLA, one at the hospital, one at the stadium. Have a son, O'Shea Jackson, June 15th, 1969, a great year for the fellas on this podcast. He grows up in the Westmont area of South LA, and there's this whole authenticity argument with the band that he's in and then with him personally that's super interesting. So he's from South LA, South Central LA, and that neighborhood is a dangerous neighborhood when he's born there in the 60s and remains a relatively dangerous neighborhood today. That being said, he's not from Compton, and everybody else is in NWA is from Compton, and Westmont is not a famous address like Compton. And he actually goes, he gets bused on the public school busing system to a medium fancy high school that's pretty far from where he lives. And he's basically, by all accounts, including his own account, not a criminal. Like he's just like a hardworking kid who's really into rap music all the way coming up into high school. He and Dre are buddies starting from when he's 16. He's one of the original people who's writing raps with Dre. Their first album, their first 12 inch. She's a Skag,
Jesus.
which I cannot recommend. I can't recommend the backing track. I can't recommend the chorus, and I cannot recommend the song. And if you are out on NWA, all you need to know is that the very first song that these two dudes do together is called She's a Skag.
Oh,
The
man.
first song you've heard of is Boys in the Hood. And at that album, I actually can recommend. And again, this is that interesting authenticity piece, right? So Eazy-E, who's the rapper on that and the front man for NWA and the owner of the record label, along with Jerry Heller, is an actual criminal. Although there's like a whole bunch of disputes about whether he, I mean, he didn't do it half of the stuff that he said, and it seems kind of unlikely that he actually ever murdered anybody. It seems very likely that he was a professional drug dealer, especially marijuana, super well known for that. And he basically sunk his money into it, into the label and into NWA and created the whole thing. So Ice Cube comes on board. And again, he's the one who writes most of the lyrics. He writes all the Eazy-E lyrics. He writes half the Dr. Dre lyrics and his own lyrics. He's kind of the architect of the entire sound. The amount of money that he gets paid off of NWA is just laugh out loud hilarious. Like he makes like 32 grand total in the entire experience
wow.
of NWA. And super mad, leaves the band, goes off as a solo act. His third solo record, Predator, has It Was a Good Day, and that's definitely the song that I'm going to choose.
Nice.
Totally unique and perfect Los Angeles song.
It really is.
The other reason to select him is he's got an amazing movie biography, too. Like,
yes.
I would put him as the most successful, maybe not in terms of money, but in terms of art, overlap between the rapping and the movies. So 1991, he's just complete scene stealer in the movie Boys in the Hood. Like Lawrence Fishburne is maybe the best part of the movie, but he's easily the second best part of the movie. He's by a mile the best young person in the movie. And this is a movie that includes Cuba Gooding Jr. He just absolutely murders the part of the gangster. So freaking fantastic. Then, and I didn't even realize this, he co-wrote the script for Friday. Did you know that, Jeff?
Really? Oh,
yeah,
I didn't know that.
John Singleton's like he's like pitching movie ideas at John Singleton, and he's like, you should write a movie that's like a comedy about the hood. Like instead of just being a violence, just be guys hanging out on the porch, getting high, and shooting the shit. And Singleton's like, hey, you know, it's not that hard to write a movie. Just sit down and write it.
Just do it. Do it.
Sounds right. In that movie, your mileage will vary depending on how you feel about it. I freaking love it. Like it's just a peek behind the curtain at a group of people that I didn't know at all. Just absolutely hilarious. And he's in Three Kings, which is like absolutely like an actual dramatic movie where he's also. And then he's in three different barbershop movies, and then 21 Jump Street. These are really good movies. And if you haven't seen any of the barbershop movies, I would really strongly recommend them. Like
really?
The first one, the best one.
Okay.
All three of them are great. Yeah. And the thing that's super interesting about it is that like Friday, it's this African-American artist who's basically made his bones and his living by showing one very particular, angry, violent slice of African-American life. Right.
Okay.
This is a guy who lives in a mansion because he was in NWA and because he wrote just about this basically the lifestyle of gangsters in that area. Barbershop is the opposite. He's just like this struggling dude who owns a barbershop, who's got a wife who he loves, who's a pain in the ass. Like that's the whole movie. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's good. It's like this great, like middle class look at working people who are African American, which I'm sure reminded him of his own family and his own parents and stuff. Fantastic. All of that being said, my song is It Was a Good Day. I absolutely love this song. When it first came out, it actually killed me. I have sad news for you, which is I listened to the song like four times all the way through, including with Dolly and Georgia, trying to choose a 1-minute snippet that included all of the funniest parts of His Good Day. And it's not possible. It's not possible. His day was so unbelievably good.
It's such a good day.
If you listen to all 4.5 minutes, you can't get it all. So Jeff, I'm going to ask you to start at 55 seconds and go to a minute 55, which I believe will capture him messing around again in triple-double.
That's what I'm talking about.
And when the Lakers beat the Supersonics, but sadly will not include the one line that I repeat to myself over and over and over from this song, which is drunk as hell, but no throwing up, which is like, that's my actual goal if I'm going out hard. It's like drunk as hell, but no throwing up. That's the target area.
Had to stop at a red light, looking in my mirror, not a jacker in sight. And everything is all right. I got a beat from Kim, and she can fuck all night. Called up the homies and I'm asking y'all, which part are y'all playing basketball? Get me on the court and I'm troubled. Last week fucked around and got a triple-double. Freaking niggas every way like MJ. I can't believe today was a good day. To the pad and hit the showers, didn't even get
just yesterday, them booze tried to blast me. Saw the police and they rolled right past me. No flexing, didn't even look in a nigga's direction as I ran the intersection. Went to Show Dog's house, they was watching you on TV raps. What's the haps on the craps? Shake 'em up, shake 'em up, shake 'em up, shake 'em. Roll 'em in a circle of niggas and watch me break 'em with the 7, 7-Eleven, 7-Eleven, 7 even back door.
It just murders me. So great. The song is so good. There's many reasons to despise the internet. Just one more reason to love the internet, though. There's a hilarious blog war between two different dudes who have chosen two different actual days. So here's what they did.
Oh, they tried to figure out the day.
They picked the release date of the song, and then for the 4 years before it, they picked every time that the Lakers beat the Supersonics. And then they looked at the weather, and they looked at whether UMT Raps was on that day, and they tried to match everything up. And they're like going backwards and forwards. And like the second guy who came over to Tupper, and the first guy was like, you chose the wrong day. And the first guy's like, how could you say that? And he's like, because Kim is actually his wife. And she was 8 months pregnant on that day. There's no way she beeped him to fuck all night when she was 8 months pregnant. And it gets back to Ice Cube. And he's like, it wasn't a day, fellas.
Yeah.
It's like, a day. Like, I amalgamated a lot of this. It's art. It's not an actual day. And he was like, did you look for the day where the Goodyear blimp wrote Ice Cube's a pimp? Because that didn't happen either.
Amazing. That's so great. What year is that?
1992?
Yep, 92.
Wow. Yeah, I remember being blown away by it.
Yeah, such an advertisement for LA, right? Yeah. Like his description of it. Oh, and you know, and actually, it's a really great, it's a great companion piece with Summertime. Super similar vibe, and it was the same concept for him too. He was like, you know, all I ever do is write about these angry things. I'm going to write about my actual good days. But it has the downside. You know what I mean? It's got the police stuff, this carjacking. Nobody got murdered. Didn't have to use his AK.
That's a good day, right there.
Time that you're having a good day, but just fantastic. I love that one.
You have Junk Is Hell not throwing up. I have 4 a.m. and I got the fat burger.
Oh yeah, I've done that too. Yeah. I think on that trip, didn't we go to Fat Burger, Jeff? You and me,
without question. And we went because of this tune.
Well, it's also in a Beastie Boys song.
Yeah. No,
we got to fly Fat Burger when I'm way out west.
Yep. They were good. They were big. It was an impressive amount of beef in the fat burger.
That's a great start to our picks. Jeff Simons, you're getting a little squirrely.
Ben and I are going to be such perfect yin and yangs because Ben just celebrated the LA of the early 90s. The amazing thing about Los Angeles is it has these moments, right? Like there's the LA that's pre-freeways. That's all centered in downtown and around the big Hollywood studio thing. And then it starts to sprawl with the freeways and you get all these different scenes. And then the 60s happened, the 70s happened, the 80s. You already got the LA Law theme song that hits that, that 80s, like just consumerist. My LA, the LA that I first experienced and that still sits in my chest is the LA of the 1970s. I was 4 years old the first time I remember being in Los Angeles, visiting my dad's parents and riding in the back seat of my grandfather's gigantic American car. It was a Toronado, which I don't think they made for very long, but it was like,
that's a big guy.
It was like a two bedroom apartment in the back seat that I was kind of rolling around in Corinthian leather and just dark. And to keep me quiet, they would just turn on AM radio and put the speakers in the back. And I would just sit in the back there on the LA freeway, watching the LA go by, listening to AM radio. So, you know, you hear the same songs all the time, all the time. And because we're in LA, we're in the car all the time. And I've talked about this before, like the first thing I ever bought with my own money that was music was a cassette single that you could buy for a quarter in a old cigarette machine. They were in malls in LA and you would like, I want that one. You chunk, chunk, one song on one side, one song on the other. Talk about a waste of plastic. But it was just when cassettes were starting to get going. And this is one of this song from this band is one of the first three songs I ever bought with my own money. And no matter how much I thought about LA, I kept coming back to this song and this band because it's such an LA story. It's got all of the tropes of the rags to riches to an anonymity LA story. This is a duo, Jim and Dash. They were both born in Texas, World War II babies, born in 1940 and 1942. They met in the crappy little local music scene in their tiny Texas hometown. And at age 16, they decided to drop out of high school and move to LA together as teenagers to make it big. They arrive in LA in 1958 and audition and immediately get into a band called the Champs, who immediately go to number one, Ben, with what song?
Do you no, remember? Please help me. I love this.
You'll know it in 2 seconds.
Oh my God.
So our heroes of our story are 17 years old and they're on every radio station in America with the awesome pseudo-instrumental Tequila by the Champs. Here it comes. So our boys find themselves at the center of LA culture very suddenly. They're on the radio, they've got a hit record, but it's the 50s, right? So your career is 5 seconds long unless you figure out how to keep it going. But they're hustlers. One of them joins Eddie Cochran's touring band, the guy who did Summertime Blues and Come On Everybody. The other one starts writing songs and writes a top 10 hit for Peggy Lee in 1961. They then start a band in 1964 with a guitar player and an unknown guitar player by the name of Glenn Campbell, who you may have heard of.
Let's go. On
superstar thing. But this band breaks up because it's time to move into the other LA trope, which is calling for a mystic religion or a cult figure.
Oh,
and
God.
In the middle of the 60s, after these guys were 50s one-hit wonders and 60s hustlers, they become completely ensconced in the Baha'i faith subculture. And they basically give up music to go all in on this super mystical, quasi-cult, like, faith thing. And they are like the peaceful head side to Charlie Manson's violent tail side through the rest of the 70s. By 1970, though, the whole peace, love, and everybody share everything, flowers of Woodstock, is starting to fade into the post-Nixon, cynical Vietnam, cocaine 1970s. And it's time to make some more records. So these two guys, whose last names are Seals and Cross.
Yes! Are you kidding?
No way.
Right out of the gate, start penning a series of top five hits. Boom, 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 boom. Immediate success. And in 1973, they put out what I think is unquestionably their greatest song, which sounds to me and will always sound like to me the sound of the LA freeway at 11 o'clock at night with the windows down and the palm trees growing and the lights going by. It is the sound for me of possibility, of ambition, of aspiration. It's trying to be breezy and cool, but it's also played by a bunch of studio pros who are just grinding away, trying to make a living in one of the toughest towns, in one of the toughest industries in the world. And the song is, of course, Diamond Girl. Here we go.
Another one like you. Part of me is deep down inside you. Can't you feel the whole world is turning? We are real and we are burning.
Oh, Oh my. I just picture your little face in the back window of a tornado.
So it gets better because we got to fulfill our LA arc. They go through the whole cocaine 70s, making light rock, light disco for people to bump to in the seedy bathrooms of ballrooms all over America. And then they're done. They have a big hit in 1978 called What You Gonna Do When She Says Goodbye. And then the world is done with Seals and Croft. And they fade almost immediately into anonymity and obscurity. They recommit themselves to the Baha'i faith through the 80s. There are a series of reunions and attempts to bring themselves back into consciousness that completely fade. They pass away, one in 2009, the other in 2017. And because no LA story is complete without some quality nepotism, currently touring as Seals and Croft are the children of Jim Seals and Dash Crofts, who play the tiny theaters and summer fairs of America, playing their dad's music.
No.
By the way, that's not a summer fair, friend. That's a county fair. I think you meant to say county fair.
I do. The most L.A. of L.A. bands and the soundtrack of my haunted L.A. childhood, Seals and Crofts is my choice for Los Angeles.
Do they open for Natalie Cole on these tours? You can't do that. Oh, so Seals and Croft, Diamond Girl, Summer Breeze, We May Never
Pass. We Will Never Play Again. This Way Again.
Oh, man. Yep.
What You Gonna Do?
Get Closer.
Where I'm Coming From. Yep.
That's my playlist for tomorrow. All day
and
long.
Ladies and gentlemen, please look at the cover of the Seals and Crofts Greatest Hits record, where these guys are, I assume, are trying to present themselves at their very best, and they're in their Baha'i robes, and they look like they have not had a shower or a haircut in the decade of the 70s. I mean, it is just like, it is such a hilarious promotional photograph. It makes me giggle every time I look at it.
I cannot believe they did Tequila. Killing me with that knowledge. Ben Barton, thoughts on Seals or Crofts?
First of all, I loved that. That was fantastic.
That's awesome.
I couldn't despise that shit anymore. So bad. So bad. I never heard that song, and I count myself so lucky. It was amazing for me. My life.
You never heard it?
That I never heard that song was so good. And now that's precious time I will never have back. That's 1 minute that will never have again on my deathbed. I'm going to mark that off as one wasted minute.
Heard them. You've heard Summer Breeze, right?
I have heard Summer Breeze. But I would not have known it's Seals and Croft. I know that there is a thing called Seals and Croft, but I could not have named one of their songs. And again,
they're easily confused with the 70s TV show makers, the Croft family, right? That made all those like Rumpelstiltskin and like there were a bunch of like
Croft family. Yeah,
yeah, totally. The Sleestak. That's right, Land of the Lost.
Yeah.
Not the same Crofts.
Sadly, not the same Crofts. Yeah. Good for them. That's awesome. I love Seals and Croft, and that is a many, many, many repeated LA story for sure.
That is. That's remarkable. I just looked up. I wanted to know if they were ever in Poco at some point, but they weren't. But Jim Messina was in Poco, as was Timothy B. Schmidt. So I think there's a 6 degrees of separation, but I think with LA bands, it's like a 3 degrees of separation. Great stuff. What a great story. And it seemed like a very different story to Ice Cube.
And yet it isn't. It's like I'm a hustler in this city where if you believe in your own mythology, you can make something happen. You just have to believe in it enough. Like, I love that about, like, yes, they couldn't be more different, and yet there's a 16-year-old kid in both these stories who's like, I think I'm destined for something bigger. And
I
then
can, I can do
be
this.
Damned if they don't make it happen.
Yeah, the idea that Ice Cube, like in 1990, that Ice Cube is going to be a huge movie star, starring in family movies. Like, are we there
who's
yet?
Who's the comedian who says they want to get a time machine so they can take 2022 Ice Cube back to 1990 Ice Cube? So 1990 Ice Cube can kick his ass. I can't remember who made that joke. It's real funny.
Oh, that's good stuff. Well, let's wrap this puppy up. I've talked a lot about Jenny Lewis, Rilo Kiley. I love them. I've been listening to them all week. If you haven't gotten into Jenny Lewis yet, do it. Do it now. But I think we would be remiss if we didn't talk about the Beach Boys, or at least get the Beach Boys on this podcast in some way. And there's one song by them that they actually are legit the first concert I ever went to. I think they were different then. In 1985, that kind of the lineup of the Beach Boys in 85 was different than the lineup.
Hey,
that
is that pre-Pokemo or post-Pokemo? Did you
it's
hear
pre?
Pokemon?
It's pre.
Kokomo. It's not Kokomo. Kokomo.
Whatever. I got Poco and Kokomo mixed up.
That's awesome. It's pre Kokomo. Kokomo's 1988.
Yeah. But anyways, I
it was think right that... when it was right when James Watt, the Secretary of the Interior, didn't think they were hoisting enough.
You remember that?
And canceled their performance on the National Mall in favor of Wayne Newton. That is a real story. From 1981 in America.
It was the July 4th celebration.
Yeah, because they've done it like 8 years in a row. And, and Watt was like, I'm not going to have these degenerates play the
First
National Mall.
Thank you, James Watt. Thank you so much that you stand up against these damn hippies in 1981.
I know, right?
I don't want to hear anything more about Rhonda. You know what I mean? Let's move on.
I always think of James Watt when that Simpsons episode where the lobbyist is like, we want to drill for oil in Teddy Roosevelt's head. And he opens up to the briefcase of money. And the guy goes, Teddy who?
I believe Ronald Reagan gave James Watt a foot trophy because he shot himself in the foot. That was Reagan's charming way of getting out of it. So he didn't have to fire James Watt.
That's awesome.
But I want to play a song, Jeff Simons, the Beach Boys, from Pet Sounds. You remarked that these two are your favorite two songs, right?
Yes.
And I just think when you think about growing up, when you think about romance, when you think about like being 16 years old and you have to like peace out, wouldn't it be nice if we just had a place of our own at the age of 16, 17, 18, 19, instead of having to say goodbye. So if you could hit me with Wouldn't It Be Nice?
We could be married, and then we'd be happy.
I'm sure I'd love to hear the musical take on things and all the different sounds that are happening in the song. But there's something so beautiful about how he expresses impatience with the older generation and this urgency to kind of get going, like, just get out of my way. Just wouldn't it be nice if we could just do our own shit? And I remember feeling those feelings in my adolescence. And it's so funny to be on the other side of them now and look at the impatience of students and or my own children who are like, all right, let's go. Let's get out of my way. I am ready to kind of take over this world that you done messed up. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Well, I remember learning songs with Ben, and Ben's eternal frustration on the song had like a sixth chord in it. You know, I was like, there's another chord in this freaking song. Like, and that was one of his like Beatles versus Stones. Like, you can learn a Stones song in the time it takes to listen to it. And the Beatles put all these stupid chords in. The Beach Boys are the ultimate. That song is 2 minutes and 25 seconds long, and it is such an unbelievable pain in the ass to learn and play. I taught the Rock Band, Wouldn't It Be Nice, one year, and like, it took them a month because it slows down, it changes tempo and pitch, and that middle bridge is like 7 new chords that never come back. That's the thing that cracks me up about the Beach Boys, is there's so much effort to make a tiny little short pop song. They were really the first ones to do that. They were little micro symphonies in terms of the complexity of the music that was just, you know, Brian Wilson following the melody in his head, you know.
All and Jeff, right. I mean, sounds into Sgt. Pepper thing.
Yeah, well, it's like, I mean, the joke is that the Beatles make Pet Sounds and Paul McCartney hears it and it's like, we have to one-up
the
that.
Beach Boys.
We have to do better than that.
Yeah.
The Beach Boys make Pet Sounds and then McCartney hears it. It's like, we have to do, like, Sgt. Pepper is his attempt to outdo Pet Sounds. What's so funny about that is Pet Sounds was a flop. It didn't sell in its moment. The big hit off it is Sloop John B, which is like tacked on at the end by the record company because they don't hear a single. And it's only in retrospect that people have gone back and been like, good God, that's a pretty amazing record. But yeah, I mean, they were definitely doing stuff at that precise moment that no other bands are doing. And then it ends like right away, like Brian has a nervous breakdown by 1968. Brian's next attempt to up Sgt. Pepper is the unreleased Smile, which has all those like little 2-minute songs about vegetables. And like, I mean, it's just like the sound of a guy slowly going crazy. I actually find it a little bit hard to listen to.
Yeah. I mean, there's that part's really depressing. And then Demi, I had to say, I grew up in the 70s and 80s, and that version of the Beach Boys was my first experience with it, and I've never really been for it. Like, it's never been.
Oh, yeah, you couldn't go back to what Kokomo the 60s were.
Just
yeah.
broke them. I saw them live at Bonnaroo.
Uh-huh. Oh, amazing.
And we were side stage right behind Brian Wilson, and he was playing the piano. But I'm pretty sure they didn't know the piano mic'd. They did let it sing, and they had where the piano music should have been, there was an iPad with a bouncing ball just going along with the lyrics for the poor guy.
Wow.
Just borderline vegetable.
Like, I saw Brian Wilson play at the Bridge Benefit.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, and he had the Wonderments backing him up, this kind of L.A. band, and you know, his face is frozen from all the drugs and terrible screen therapy they put him through, so his face never changes, and he's like, this is a happy song, let's all smile, and he goes, you can't smile. It was reminding me of Phil Hartman's Frankenstein impression singing Beach Boys music. It was really unsettling.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, I don't mean to be mean, but that's exactly what it was like. It was like watching the Phil Hartman Frankenstein cover Beach Boys songs. That guy is
what causes nervous breakdown? You just wired that way?
No, way too much LSD and abuse from the dad. And I mean, it's a cripplingly sad story. And then he gets under the thumb of this Svengali cult therapist named Eugene Landy, who like locks him in his house through the 70s and just strips his will to live. I mean, it's a happy ending in the end. He comes out of it, and he has a whole third act where he's walking around as a human being again. But I mean, the damage is just so intense.
And the Svengali guy, my recollection of it is that he would make him write a song before he'd feed him.
Oh, right. My God.
Oh, it's just torturous. Yeah. Paul Giamatti plays him in the outstanding movie about Brian Wilson where John Cusack plays Brian Wilson. And it's super satisfying. He does. I'm sure it's a pitch perfect impression.
Oh, now I'm all depressed. You got to someday, Jeff Simons, write your book about cults in California. Because the seven.
Speaking of books, however,
one of us is actually writing
a freaking book. Let's hear the update.
Update. I'm at 72,000 words. So that's great. I feel I have one last chapter. It's a chapter on plagiarism, which unfortunately hasn't been in the news at all. So I've got to write that particular chapter and then I'll be done with a rough draft. But big news, thanks to you, Jeff Simons, mentioning Admissions Confidential. I went to Rachel Tor's website. She's written 7 books now, and I emailed her and she's like, and I said, you know, I've got some questions. I'm in the draft phase. And she's like, oh, let's talk. And we had an hour long conversation on Saturday. Nice. You know, she's written, so now she's written a couple of books about college, but a book about jogging, a memoir. She wrote a novel. So she's into fiction. So she was super great, super helpful, and just kept poking the bear. Like, why are you writing this? Why are you writing this? Why? No. Who's your audience? Stop it with those questions. Yeah. So really, really great stuff from Rachel Tor. So
that's awesome. Nice.
Thanks to you. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. I'm so glad that worked out.
Yeah. Check it out. Substack. Tim Plain. Woo. And speaking of which, I got to go post one for tomorrow. Oh, excellent. And then Ben Barton, I sent you a bear. Oh, I sent you an email with.
Yeah.
So happy reading to you, but that's what you get when you give excellent feedback. As you once taught me, what is the reward for good work?
More work, my favorite.
More work. All right, man. You guys are great. I will check you later.
All right, friends. See you soon.
All right, see
you. Bye-bye.
Ever thought about starting your own podcast? Do you have a business or a message you want to share with the world?
Well, now it's easier than ever with Electricast. Hi, I'm Mark Netter.
And I'm Peter Rafelson. We're the founders of Electricast Media.
Whether you want to start a new podcast or already have one, join Electricast to grow your audience, monetize your content, and build your community.
With our simple sign-up, you get free promotion, world-class analytics, premium ads, and personal support.
Go to Electricast.com and join our community today.
Electricast. Transform your influence.
Electricast. Hey there, fabulous souls. I'm Stephanie Bachlaan.
And I'm Eden Alpert.
And we're the hosts of the brand new podcast, Unapologetically Fab.
Get ready to join us on an amazing and real journey as we dive into life after 40 and own it.
We're all about changing the narrative, leaning into who you are, and living a life by your own design.
Join us as we embrace life unapologetically and redefine success.
This is Unapologetically Fab,
an Electricast production.
See you there.
Electricast.